Hello and welcome to the Unlikely Podcast. Staring at across from me is my broadcast partner. Podcast partner. Sam Logan. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm doing okay. I don't appreciate that you seem to question some of the titles. Like, there's no question. I am the other person in this podcast with you. There's nobody else. Let me check. Spirits, are you there? No, it's just us. It's me and Josh Logan for the hour. That's my Charlie Rose.
That's good. Yeah. I like that Charlie Rose. I don't think he says that, though. Doesn't it Larry King says, for the entire hour, Barbara Streisand?
I think Larry King probably says that, but I know at least, I think he's...
I don't think Charlie Rose does the whole, for the hour. Although sometimes, usually, his guests do last an hour.
He does have the one where, at least the interviews involving actors that I've seen, I think he has done something similar to that, but maybe it is a Larry King
thing. When there's a light topic, he'll do a half hour of one thing, and then he'll have his next topic of another thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they stopped doing? The McLaughlin Group.
Yeah, they did. There's a pretty good reason for that.
Well, yeah, John McLaughlin died, mm-hmm. But I had a suspicion that show was bigger than just one person. Right. You can't keep going. You miss one guy.
You got to form a new group. You can't call it the McLaughlin group. What are you going to call it? The Pat Buchanan group? It just moves on to the next oldest guy in the room. He sits in the chair.
The Eleanor Cliff group.
So, instead of Game of Thrones, it's Game of Armchairs.
I'm kind of surprised by that because it was not a lot of people watch the show. I understand that. But it was an institution for Washington, D.C. PBS shows. Mm-hmm. And it made it across the nation.
Right.
And for it just to drop off and never come back and... The four people, I don't know. I like all the people on the panels, but they couldn't come up with somebody.
Yeah.
Like, I know Morton is dead.
Morton.
There's the guy that works for Wall Street Journal. Anyway.
Isn't there that British guy that retweets some of your stuff?
I wish he did.
No, he at least you got him to respond to some of your...
Yes, yeah. We've talked several times.
Go to podcast episode 51 if you'd like to relive Josh's interactions with...
Tom Rogan
of the McLaughlin Group.
Right. So anyway, McLaughlin is dead and so is his group.
Mm-hmm.
So over the past... It was not last weekend, but the weekend before. Not this presidential weekend.
Well, to me, every weekend's a presidential weekend.
Only because that's the suite that you stay in at the hotel you live mm-hmm. at.
I like the finer things.
The other brother, whose name must not be spoken.
Is it a Wayans brother?
Because he's in league with Sauron. We tried out for The Amazing Race.
Oh, okay.
And The Amazing Race is a show, if you don't know what it is. It's on a channel where only old people watch shows because they still have shows where people laugh when you're supposed to laugh on their comedy shows.
Yeah, they have laugh tracks to tell you, this is funny, this is CBS.
I don't watch CBS, but when I accidentally get on there and give one of their shows a shot... It's amazing how poorly written,
mm-hmm.
yet the laugh track comes on, and you're supposed to laugh, and it's kind of jarring, yeah. because I'm so not used to that laugh track.
Yeah.
It just kind of gives me a bad feeling.
Yeah, that you're watching something dumb.
Where we haven't learned that this doesn't work anymore.
Right, because that's another running theme in a lot of the kids' programming that you probably see as an adult. I don't watch it, as you see as a parent. Is a key part of their programming is the laugh track.
Yeah.
And it does give you kind of the feeling that, should I be watching this? Is this kind of dumb?
Right.
It's like, you know what? I'm having a hard time believing in the Big Bang Theory here, because the jokes are kind of dumb.
The evidence is a little flimsy for this theory.
I'm saying it's got to be repeatable.
Yeah.
Anyways.
And I know it was somewhat of a modern change to... comedy or any show filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the great vast majority of people under 40 do not expect to hear a laugh track.
No.
And it's a sign that you're watching a pretty old show, at least demographically targeted old show.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we tried out for The Amazing Race, and it was a convention center in Santa Clara.
Oh, so they didn't start you out in a parking lot in L.A.? And Phil had you run and solve a puzzle on the other side of the parking lot?
Phil was there. He had made an appearance, but I didn't see him.
Phil was there? Did he move his eyebrow?
I'm sure he did. He gave a speech. It was a tourism convention. Oh. And so they had a bunch of other touristy things. And so we got in one line to get our race audition number after we got our wristbands. So we got our wristbands first. The first trick was to find the sign that said Amazing Race Auditions and the arrow to point that way. Because that was confusing.
Right.
I felt like this was kind of a tryout.
Kind of a challenge?
Yeah, it was kind of a challenge, and I felt like we were not excelling at first.
It might be a good sign of what would happen.
Not going to work. We are still in English-speaking countries.
Remember this part of the challenge when it comes back around.
And I'll take credit, because I saw the sign. And so we walked down the hallway, got wristbands, and they asked us what time slot, because we had an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got wristbands. And then they said, well, you got to go back down the same place you were and stand in a different line and get a piece of paper with the number. So then we went right back down to where I first saw the sign, got what back into the convention center, stood in line with some people that had no shot to get on the Amazing Race.
Oh, they didn't have a chance. They weren't you.
I won't go into the criteria, but I'll just say I've watched almost every episode of The Amazing Race, and I understand who gets on the show and who doesn't get on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's reasons for that, but yeah. I don't want to get personal. But they had no shot, and a lot of people that tried out didn't have a shot, at least if they're using the same criteria as past seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got that piece of paper, and then we had to walk back down to where we got our wristbands.
Oh, sounds like a lot of movement.
It felt like, and then it struck me, is this some sort of weird test to see if we could find
it? Are you really on the first episode and like following you around? See, could they get to their interview?
I don't have my passport yet. I can't go anywhere, Phil. And so we went back down to where we got the wristbands, and then we got in line. And then when we got in line, there was a marker and a board so you could write your names on that piece of paper that we got with the number on it. And I still have that piece of paper. And so we got in line to go into a ballroom. There was no dancing. It was very disappointing.
Hmm.
They still call it a ballroom.
I feel like that would be the first challenge, right? Dance your way to the appointment.
Find the ballroom, then dance your way onto the show.
And the judges said you weren't graceful enough. I'm sorry, you won't make your appointment.
So we stood in line, and we met some of the people that were in front of us, and they were...
Did you deem them worthy?
Yes, they were definitely... And I can get into this because I'm somewhat of an Amazing Race nerd, but they have certain demographic... slots they have to fill.
Yep.
It's unlike a Shakespeare play where you just find enough boys to put wigs on. So they have different groups that they want to present the show because they want to attract viewers of those groups' representatives.
Right. Yes.
So in front of us was two child psychologists. I don't know the difference. But anyway, they worked with kids, and they were very nice ladies from the L.A. area.
Hmm.
Their husband, one of their husbands, found the article that had been sent to them, and they drove up the day before.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a big deal. And our other brother was amazed by this, because he's seen an episode of the show. So he had no idea how big this show is.
Okay, now I'm confused. You're saying our other brother, who will remain nameless.
Absolutely.
Though we could probably say his name because he doesn't listen to the podcast.
Right.
He has watched an episode of The Amazing Race.
Only after I forced him to the night before.
Why would you apply to a show you've never seen?
I don't know. It has more to do with getting the $1 million than actually participating in a show.
Okay, but well, he's got actually, the proper motivation.
But Nat, actually, after we watched the show, he really enjoyed it.
Okay.
And I could tell because he was laughing, and then he even referenced it later. And so I could tell he liked the show. He just never took the time to watch it.
Hmm.
So as we talked with the child psychologist, psychiatrist.
The difference between the two, the psychiatrists are in the room with the child, whereas the psychologists, I think, are observing them from a safety bubble a mile away.
Okay. I would say they're psychiatrists. In my world. I would guess they're psychiatrists then. And they, one lady was, ran the business? Practice. And so they were talking to us about the show, and I asked them the questions about, you know, how much have you watched, who was your favorite team, because these are the things that are going to be talked, they're asked usually when you do interviews. And so they said, there was another pair of women doctors that had won the show earlier, and they actually kind of looked like these women doctors. They were just shorter than them.
Okay.
I said, that's a great great job. You fit that demographic perfectly. You're great contestants on the show, and we'll go from there. And they had different questions like, I wonder if they tell you what to bring on the show, and they say, what? And the other lady said, well, yeah, I'm sure they do. But point in fact, they do not tell you what to bring. They just tell you what you cannot bring.
Oh.
And so I referenced a couple things that they could look up if they did get picked on the show. So that impressed our other brother, who must not be named,
right?
Because were impressed because they were fans of the show. But I am a super fan of the show,
right?
And I know all this stuff.
Right.
And so impressions was made all around.
Wow. So really, you won the day.
So they then as we get closer to the ballroom, they let in certain groups. Certain amount
those
of
those who were amazing, those who were less amazing.
They let in a certain number of groups in. And then when you got in, they closed the door behind you because it's a big ballroom. No dance floor.
No.
All carpet. And they had, throughout this huge room, six different stations where they had a camera, they had a boom mic, and the mic was really close, but above your head.
Right, so they could pick up your voice and not show up on camera.
And it was amazing how close it was, and yet it was out of the shot.
Yeah.
So it was pretty impressive. So we sat, and there was another group, so we could watch as the other six groups in front of us were going, and as one group was done, they would go out the doors, and then the lady would bring up another group. And I could tell there's, again, people who wanted to be on the show to be famous. There was one group that came up without any socks or shoes and did handstands and did a cartwheel of sorts. And there was one guy who said, I guess I could summarize why I would want to be on the show because life is fitness and fitness is life. And I want to tell you, Sam, that this guy was in a great overall physical shape.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell you that.
Oh, really?
So if fitness was his life, I'm not sure. I'm not sure his life is going well.
I double check on that. Really, that sounds like there was something you would hear from your workout coach, that's also the T-shirt that he has. Life is fitness, and then on the back, fitness is life.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And you're saying he was less than fit.
Less than fit. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe he is on the way.
Right. This is probably a new mantra for him.
There was a couple ladies before him that were cracking each other up, having a good time, and I felt good for them because I think that was a pretty good audition. I guess one of the ladies had a Band-Aid on her forehead, and so the other lady said, "Don't mind the Band-Aid. She just scratched her head. It's no big deal. She's tough." And so it came to our turn, and after we wished the child psychiatrist good luck, we did our turn, and they asked us, state your name, where you're from, hold the paper up in front of you, and the cameras aren't going to pick up our voices, meaning the producers asking the questions. Mm-hmm. So if you could do this favor for us, if you could repeat the question after I ask you, so it picks up your voice, mm-hmm. and then you give your response.
That way they know what question you're answering.
Right. And so I immediately forgot that as soon as they asked me the first question.
I would do the same thing because I've been working on my answer.
Exactly.
I'm not thinking of the question.
No, I only repeated the question when they asked me a question I did not expect to answer.
And that's the only time I repeat questions, is like...
To give myself time to think.
So, what are some of your weaknesses? what are some of my weaknesses?
Exactly.
I understand that.
Right. So, I immediately forgot that as soon as we did our introductions. But they asked us three questions, and... why would you make a good team on The Amazing Race?
Why would we make a good team on The Amazing Race?
And I got so excited and nervous at the same time, I immediately did not remember to repeat that.
Yeah.
And I just went right into my answer. Like,
yeah.
And I tried to get all my bullet points down.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Where this
blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I ran out. You ever start a sentence and not know how to finish it?
Yep.
I got to that point. Fortunately, our other brother jumped in. And made a joke, and then the second question was,
what would make you a good team was one of them.
What was a good team?
Why are you trying out for The Amazing Race?
No, that wasn't it.
What's your favorite team on The Amazing Race?
No, that was a question they asked somebody else that we knew went.
What's your favorite color?
Not that either.
Do you understand the instructions of this interview where you need to answer, you need to give the question first?
I am completely blanking on the second question, but I had an answer ready for it.
Yeah.
So it was something I had known it was coming, except for this podcast. But the third question I did not expect. They asked if I had any special skills.
What any special skills? I have staff skills.
I have nunchuck skills.
Nunchuck skills? I can chuck a football over that mountain.
Oh, this is the second question, which I briefed our brother on, who then said, they're not going to ask that question on the way down. Seriously.
They're not going to ask that question.
What does your partner need to work on? I already had both of our answers worked out for us, because I knew they were going to ask this question.
Yeah.
Here's what I needed to work on as a partner.
Partner, yeah.
I need to be less critical of when he makes mistakes, because when we play softball, I scream at him from the outfield.
You had one job.
Exactly. What does he need to work on? Listening.
I like how you figured out what his weaknesses are.
It proved my point when he said they're not going to ask that question. And I said, yes, they are, because they said they asked these questions beforehand. He goes, no way are they going to ask this question.
Oh, wow, that's great. So I hope you criticized him thoroughly afterwards just to prove you have something to work on.
No, I just pointed that out for him, because he said, oh, I think we're good. I don't think we need to work on anything. And I said, well, no. He needs to work on listening to me as a member of this team, because I told him that we're going to ask this question.
Yeah.
But then he said I was too boring, and that's what I needed to work on. So I gave the real answers, and he told jokes.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know what, knowing both of you as I believe I do.
I think you could take that liberty.
I think I can, I could take that step. That doesn't surprise me in the least.
No. And so, I think it went well, but it's been over a week now.
Yeah.
Now, I think we're the 289th.
Group that went in there?
Right, because that was our number.
Yeah.
I don't know how many groups went in. But I know we were the 289th one, mm-hmm. So I know they have to go through all the tapes. If they filter it by who repeated the questions, I think we'll be out.
Yeah.
Because we did not do that. But
I think you just made it harder on the editor to break down to segment it for whoever it is going to see it, that's all.
I think so, too. I think it's just going to be silence, talking. More talking?
Yeah.
Silence. Talking. Silence.
Like,
talking.
They're the type of questions where you don't have to wonder what the question is. I mean, your answers are going to pretty much show
exactly
what question you're answering.
Right.
So
they didn't say, what diseases are you dying from presently? And yeah. Adam said, the brother that must not be named said, I think we're good.
Yeah. And also wasn't like it was math problems. Like, okay, if you have a train coming this way and then it's just silence. And you say 12 miles. So yeah, you don't have to worry about
that. I don't think so. I felt good about it. We talked to the child psychiatrist afterwards. They felt good about their interview as well.
Did you need some counseling afterwards? Like, my inner child really had a hard time with this interview.
What I told them that they could use their ability in dealing with teams that are somewhat angry and childlike.
They could diagnose them
pretty well.
Yeah.
So I felt like we presented ourselves in the strongest way we could, authentically. I mean, you can always change your resume and fake it up, but it's going to be your...
You are who you are.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens, but we'll be podcasting throughout the year.
The podcast will not be interrupted by An Amazing Race.
I doubt that.
Okay.
I think my chances of being on the show went from 0% to 0.5%.
Hey.
So
here's progress.
Yeah, it's kind of like a lottery ticket. You don't win if you don't scratch.
Yeah, you can't win if you don't play.
You know, my dermatologists say that too.
Stop scratching.
You can't get better if you keep scratching. Just...
Now, this is... Now,
speaking
what's hard
of scratching.
To do, what's hard to do is to switch from the lighthearted stories of life to things not so lighthearted.
What diseases are you currently dying from?
Leprosy.
I think we're good.
We're good. We're fine. I only need 9 fingers.
Why would that work as an answer? Just to go back to that.
Yeah. It's like,
we're good. We're okay, good. Thanks for that answer.
Yeah, how are they supposed to learn anything from
that?
Oh,
they're perfect.
We're good.
All right.
What do you need to work on? Nothing.
Nothing. Next question.
Yeah.
Was it like a press conference?
You got a fourth question for me? Because that third one was a real easy one.
This is total fake news.
Yeah, speaking of,
ask Phil Kogan how he got his job.
He'll tell you. Yes, and speaking of, as we switch over to politics,
yes,
current events, life itself, as it invades our podcast again, I've found it invading my own life. Mm-hmm. That I don't seek it out. It comes at me. Even in my acting classes that I'm taking in the city, mm-hmm. Both times, Donald Trump was used as an example, and I believe used accurately, mm-hmm. To demonstrate the teacher's point. In one case, he was used to compare to a character that we're studying, showing that character's narcissism.
Right.
Which made total
Classic
sense.
Classic narcissist. Right.
In another case, the other acting class I had, they discussed his just domineering attitude. And also, I put in also a terrible attitude towards women that both him
and a bad handshaker.
Both him and Richard III have in common. Now, those were normal. Then it made sense, at least in that context, for him to be used as that example.
Right.
What I did not expect was for Donald Trump to come up during my BART ride on my way to the city.
Mm.
As I'm sitting there just listening to my iPod and just, you know, trying to relax. And
iPhone.
It's true. It is my iPhone. The greatest what did Steve Jobs say that the greatest iPod that he made was the iPhone?
Yeah.
Yes. It just goes to show you, I don't call people on that thing. I have voicemails on there. They will not be returned.
Do not call Sam.
Don't do it. You might as well just tie your message to the leg of a dove and wish it bon voyage as it goes to a ship, I assume.
Sure.
Because that's what you're saying when you're saying bon voyage.
Why is the bird getting on a boat?
Have a great sail.
Wouldn't it be flying?
Well, it's a lazy bird.
I see.
It comes like, that letter's going a long ways, and the bird's not going to be able to make that far.
I see. It so. Knows what boat to get on.
Right, because again, it's a wrong number. So, So I'm sitting on BART, just minding my own business.
Bay Area Rapid Transit.
Bay Area Rapid Transit. Yeah, I wasn't sitting on a person named BART.
No.
Waiting for transportation. And as I'm just sitting there, minding my own business, listening to some sort of podcast, I assume. And this person ahead of me, one bench ahead of me is on the phone talking. And there's another person, an aisle across from them. And the person is, talking kind of loudly on their phone. And the observer, an elderly person, says, "Hey, I can hear you." He says, "Oh, you can hear me? Oh, great. Bleep you, Donald Trump. I'm glad you can hear me." As we try to keep this...
What is the age range of the person in front of you?
I'd say they were an adult.
Okay. 20s, 30s?
I'd say in their 30s.
Okay.
And the elderly gentleman, I think probably 60, late 60s, early 70s.
Can I assume the elderly gentleman is white?
You can assume correctly.
Okay.
And he said, "Hey, I'm deaf and I can hear you." And I said, "Oh, I'm glad you can hear me." And just kept on talking and cursed at him a couple times using the same curse word I deleted previously. And then much to the delight of another older lady in the train, who's the only other person who reacted to this, she just bent over laughing at this entire exchange. So even in my BART ride,
how dare you,
with one person, the younger person, assuming this older white man voted for Donald Trump, though, and also I can tell you that older white man on the BART train was not Donald Trump. So there's no reason to.
So it was racism.
Well, I don't know if it's racism. It's just the assumption that someone voted for Donald Trump simply because he's an older white man. When, if you think of another prominent older white man by the name of Bernie Sanders, definitely didn't vote for Donald Trump.
That's right.
So it's kind of a gross stereotyping of someone to assume they voted for Donald
Trump. Terrible. Terrible gross stereotyping. But very humorous. And wonderful for the podcast. Please continue in this class of yours.
I will continue.
Stir up strife on the BART.
First of all, I stirred up no strife on the BART. I was merely an observer and continue to be.
Hey, that guy wants you to get off the phone.
Hey, I bet you that guy voted for Trump.
Hey, he really loves Donald Trump. Yell at him. Well,
I think he wants you to pipe down.
I think he wants you to be quiet. I think he thinks your people are always too loud and that know each other. Speaking of the Congressional Black Caucus, do you know anybody in the Congressional Black Caucus? Do you want to set up the meeting? Do you know them? Are they friends of yours? Sure they are.
Have you heard of Frederick Douglass?
He's doing great stuff. It's continued to progress. Yeah. I can't wait till he goes throughout my term as president. One of the things that has struck me in this period of time of the Trump presidency, of Trump's America, is one of the things that I've kind of learned from his mistakes is that when you have the inability to admit when you are wrong, you are giving yourself no level of empathy is the wrong word. Yeah. It raises the expectations of others on you.
Yeah, you don't give yourself a margin of error.
Right, exactly. And it raises the amount of judgment that you expect others to judge you with.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're saying that the rollout went perfectly. The government is running like a finely tuned machine. All these things are flatly false. But because he doesn't admit the small mistakes or even the big mistakes, he can't give himself the leeway to say, you know what, I made a mistake there, and I'm going to work on it, and I'm trying to get better.
What you'd expect a normal person to say. Also, he failed to actually name a finely tuned machine, which I also find a little bewildering.
Well, he is 70 years old.
Any machine.
He knew the Wright brothers.
And we were moving. It's the government's moving around like a great cotton gin. It's moving around like a great printing press. Any of the machines of his generation.
But what happens when you fail to admit the small mistakes is that when you make a presentation and you make an argument and other people who do admit mistakes that support your argument then get lumped in with somebody who has no credibility, who has no authority to give these presentations because you lie about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would I trust you in this case when you can't even admit the little stuff? Like, you fired, the NSA guy because he talked to Russia before he was actually in the government.
Right.
And the Logan Act will not be violated.
I do appreciate that the Logan Act gets brought up. I feel like it has been brought up more often in this election cycle than ever before.
Absolutely. And I've heard a history of the Logan Act. Alan Dershowitz was on Morning Joe, and he says it's basically a fanciful law that never gets applied. The only time it was ever used was back in the 1890s when some farmer talked to some foreign country in France, and he
really?
Was locked up for it.
And that
other than that, there's never been a case that's never been brought to justice. So it's a completely useless law.
Okay, that act was made so that farmers won't talk to the French. I don't think we have that problem anymore.
The Logan Act says that a private citizen cannot contact a foreign government on behalf of the United States government.
Right.
So the only time it was actually used to imprison someone, to charge someone with a crime, was a farmer. I forget it. It was in the 1890s, way back when.
I assume the farmer's name was John Logan.
No, I think the guy who wrote the law was last named Logan.
Oh, okay, because sometimes, names after the person who was involved.
No, that would be retroactive lawmaking. So he breaks the law, and then you write it. Wait, he doesn't break the law.
He's the reason for the law, so put his name on it.
That's true, but usually they do that for victims of crimes, not the perpetrator.
To each their own.
You're guilty of vehicular O.J. Simpson.
That's the thing.
You are now.
That would be. I think that would be a good, a good deal to work out. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm getting put into prison, but you know what? They're gonna name an act after you. Don't worry, Farmer Logan.
I was the only one that ever stole enough Q-tips from work to get thrown into jail.
The old Q-tip Act.
The old Beasley Act. I'm sorry if your name is Beasley.
Lay off the Q-tips.
The other thing, I talk to a lot of people about politics.
Ooh, you live a sad life.
I do. but I don't hear people getting cursed out on BART, so...
You!
I don't get that, comedy throughout my day.
Nuts to you, John Kasich.
I
just assumed you were a moderate from Ohio.
And I like him more and more every time he talks. When I talk to people about politics and when I talk to people about the president, it's still a generational divide, I have found.
Mm-hmm.
And the older generation, and what I think is happening, is they have come from a type of leader where they're used to more of an autocratic, top-down, strong leader.
Mm-hmm.
Prototype is the wrong word. Anyway, that's their...
A strong executive
ideal
office, yeah.
For a president.
Right.
Whereas the younger generation is more into the transparent, the more humble, whether fake or real, leader that admits mistakes, is a little bit more real,
right?
That is okay with delegating authority and power. And so when we run up against a guy who's old school like Trump, it seems off to us, where it clicks with the older generation. And I think that's maybe what was underlying a lot of the problems with Obama, because he was so aloof, and he let his secretaries of state and defense, they basically did whatever they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt like that was a weak president.
Hmm.
But now we got this old guy, and he's Mr. Autocratic, and yeah. I'm going to write all these bills, and I'm right. going to all these you know, executive orders. And mm-hmm. it really fits what, in their mindset, is a strong president. And I don't think we can get around that, no matter what he does. So what I found is that, you know, politics is temporary because things change every 2 to 4 years.
Right.
What you and I realize, and maybe what other people don't realize when they're in this sort of mindset, is that he, Trump, can destroy the reputation and the backing for a lot of the ideals, a lot of the beliefs that people want him to accomplish.
Right.
Because if he ends in a failure, which is likely to happen if he continues down this road,
mm-hmm.
then so do the ideals, the beliefs that he represents, air quotations,
right.
along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, we have to get around this idea that the president is the Messiah. Because when Obama came into office, the left saw him as the Messiah.
Yeah.
When Trump was running, a certain segment of the people saw him as the Messiah.
Right.
We have to stop assigning politicians Messiah-like qualities.
Right.
He is not going to bring in the kingdom, okay?
Right.
He's not going to do that.
He's not going to fix all the ills that are going on in the world.
It doesn't matter if it's Trump. It doesn't matter if it's Obama. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Will Smith. They're not going to be able, who I believe should run in 2020, if he can get rid of that Scientology background.
As long as he has, and Vice President Justin Timberlake, they'll be right on their way.
Their campaign slogan, let's get jiggy with it.
They're just going to rap and sing all their campaign stops.
That's right. Because that's the type of culture that we are
then
now.
We are getting to the point where it's just vote for the most entertaining person to run the country.
Exactly. So we have to, as individuals, understand, what do I believe? I understand that this candidate may believe part of what I believe. But if that candidate disagrees with what I believe or misrepresents it, I'm not going to still fully support that candidate, defend him to the end of the earth, the flat earth that Kyrie Irving believes in.
Right. And dolphins and mermaids.
You have to believe what you believe. Stop thinking your Messiah is coming. I'm not going to get... The Messiah has already come. He was a Jewish carpenter about 2,000 years ago.
And we've entered a different podcast. Go ahead.
So
convert the unconverted.
So don't assign that universal fix that person's going to be.
Right.
Anytime the country is moving in a wrong direction, which I believe everybody thinks it is.
Right, because if it's not lining up with your political leanings, you think, oh no, the house is on fire and we're all going down.
Well, I think the left sees there's... it was going wrong direction when Obama was in president. In president, after president, after
I read... When I was president.
And so they see things wrong in our society, too. And the right sees a lot of the problems from a different perspective. So we all see as we're heading in the wrong directions, and polls show that. But what we have to also understand is it's like a big the Titanic boat.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't shift that boat really fast in a 4-year term or in an 8-year term or in a, you know, whatever's 4 plus 8.
Scholars disagree.
Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah. It'll take like 12 years to figure that out.
And so what we have to decide to be happy with is small steps towards the right direction.
Right.
We're not going to turn the ship around in a month. But if we can start making the case for the destination we want to go, we can start getting everybody on the boat looking forward to changing directions, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so what I found that people who get their messiah into office get frustrated when the boat isn't changing as fast as they want them to change. And what you have to understand is politics is temporary, and that's why you have to keep presenting your argument to the next generation, and the next generation, and the next generation, and elaborate your policies, your principles, and apply them to the political situation that changes every day, every month, every year.
Right.
Especially in foreign policy. I mean, that changes it all the time because governments do things differently all the time.
Yep.
And so you have to have a coherent strategy, you have to have a coherent policy, principles that you want the country to move into. And you can't get all frustrated because you can't get all your chocolate on day one. Okay?
No.
You have to, you know, work with
you
what you got.
You got to spread that chocolate around.
Make small improvements.
Otherwise, you're going to be throwing up.
Right. It's like people who want to lose 30 pounds in 8 hours. It's not going to happen.
Mm-mm.
Try to lose an ounce every 8 hours. Make small improvements. Turn that boat slowly. And if you turn the boat slowly,
avoid the iceberg.
Absolutely. You don't upset more people. Now, if you do have an iceberg coming towards you, you have to move the boat very fast.
Right.
And things like the debt ceiling, the debt that we have, all these things are an iceberg coming at us. Social Security, right. Medicare, all these things are real things that affect all of us, whether or not we believe there's the right solution or not. We have to come up with something.
Right, because we're all going to be affected by these problems. We're going to be affected if our health care plan works or doesn't work. We're all going to be affected if Social Security suddenly bottoms out.
Right, and all I'm saying is if you're a socialist or left-leaning, figure out a way to pay for it. That's fine. If that's the direction you want to lead, make it financially responsible. If you're a capitalist, figure out a way to pay for it. If you can show people that they'd be better off in a capitalistic system, free market system, which I believe they would be, than in a socialist system, make that case.
Right.
But don't get frustrated when everybody doesn't agree with you on day two. The boat moves slowly. And so you want to make small incremental changes. Stop trying to jostle the boat around.
Right.
And people will not be a lot, you know, even if they disagree with you, if they see why you're doing what you're doing, and if you can explain it in a way that they can see, you know, I disagree with the way you're going, but I agree with your destination, then it's much easier to make these changes. Because the next 2 years, there's Republicans in the Senate, Republicans in the House, and a Republican in the White House.
Air quotes. Right. And I do think there is a lot of fear, I think, especially on the left, though there always is when...
Well, there's a lot of fear on the right when Obama got in.
Right.
There was
going
to be blood in the streets. There was a civil war coming, Sam.
Right, yeah.
A civil war.
Yeah.
Little did we know there was one, but it had to do with superheroes.
Yes, I do. I still remember the rumors of Obama getting a... by the way, President Obama. The other thing that also annoys me is when people are president... And then the news always refers to them as Mr. Obama or Mr. Trump. They have the title. You might as well use it. But the idea of President Obama getting a third term.
Let me apologize to Dark Lord Sauron. Continue. It's his title.
Right. Use the title.
he didn't go to evil doctor school for nothing.
Right. But I think there is a hyper type of fear from the left that we didn't see from the right, and
much more violent.
Right, but let me tell you where it comes from, though.
No, I'm not going to let you.
All right, then. Good night, everybody. what it comes really from the left's perspective of the role of government and the government expanding and doing everything. Right. So from their perspective, the government should have a maximum amount of power to do everything. Now they're in the troubling scenario of, oh no, the wrong guy is in power and he has a whole lot of power.
Right. And that leads you to the understanding then the left should be small government people too.
Right. Because this is the Trump should be the example for why we need small government, because if you have the wrong guy in power, and we do, you have these massive government-wide programs being rushed out there and affecting a lot of people, like the travel ban rollout that was sloppily ran out there.
No, it wasn't. The rollout was great.
Poorly explained to the American people.
Fake news.
And it didn't work.
Do you work for CNN?
No, I just share their website a lot. Yeah, so there is that.
Are you friends with Jake Tapper?
I should be.
is Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room?
He is, but no one can understand him. So what we have is that's why the left is so afraid, because that's their view of government, and the type of government that really both parties have perpetuated is an ever-expanding government and it getting larger and larger. So the prosperity and success of our country all depends on if the right person's in office.
Right, if their messiah is in office.
Right, and also it's because we saw a similar thing with Obama, with Obamacare, except for it wasn't nearly the disaster that the rollout was, the travel ban. But there's similarities. What I'm talking about is a massive government...
The website didn't work for a week, Sam.
Right, a massive government move.
I am dealing with such a liberal right now.
I'm telling you about a massive government move that didn't work.
You do work for CNN.
I'm just...
Do you trim Wolf Blitzer's beard?
We play handball.
That's how deep.
We play handball. It was just a massive government move that didn't work.
Right, right, right.
And was poorly planned. Because you know what their framework is? I have this intention, and then I'm going to have this gigantic program that's going to fix it. Never mind, I don't have all the details figured out for this massive plan.
I don't slow down for birds. I drive right through them.
Because I've got such a good idea in mind.
Right.
That's what I'm going to do. But they just fail to really put that together.
Or ask someone else for advice.
Right. That's what Trump failed to do, was get into any of the details of the program at all, and just said, and also did a horrible job of selling it to the American people. They just shoved it right down their throats. At least with Obamacare, there was the idea of, this is what we're trying to do, and this is why we're doing it. Trump's travel ban was, we're banning them. Everybody's banned.
You're banned. You're banned.
We barely kept Steve Bannon. Everything's been banned.
Right. I think you're exactly right. To put it in a more historical context, I've been thinking about how the president that we have is usually a reaction to the president we had previously. We had, I don't even know how far we want to go back. Oh, let's go back to Eisenhower.
Oh, we're going to be here a while. Do we have to go all the way, go to Eisenhower and then come all the way to present day?
Yeah, it'll be quick.
Oh,
so we had
this is President's Day.
Eisenhower, old guy, general, very somewhat conservative, who followed him?
John F. Kennedy.
Young John F. Kennedy. So he gets shot and killed, Lyndon B. Johnson.
Well, that was a reaction to the previous president being assassinated.
Yeah.
Johnson doesn't run.
Johnson doesn't run. Nixon wins. Nixon is somewhat of a contrast to Johnson, as in he's not an alcoholic who speaks out of line, but Nixon's kind of a
racist from California.
I don't know if that's true.
He grew up in California, and if you listen to those Nixon tapes.
Oh, really?
I was like, ooh, no.
Oh. Was it, I thought it was just anti-Semitic stuff.
That counts as racism.
Oh, I know. I just thought it was, I thought we were talking about, African-American racism.
There's all kinds, brother. Oh, okay. We don't have time.
It's a whole rainbow. And so we get Nixon, and then he resigns, but then we get Ford. But in reaction to Nixon, we get Jimmy Carter. yep. Southern.
He's a Christian peanut farmer.
Christian hey, peanut y'all. Farmer. He's not from Washington D.C.
Right.
And because he was such a failure and not really a great personality, we then get
a personality president
with Ronald Reagan. But then we get a guy without much of a personality, George W. Bush. But we get tired of him, so we go back to a guy with a personality mm-hmm. in Bill Clinton.
Right.
Well, it didn't turn out that his personality was all that good, so we went back to a guy who had a good story, who had recovered from some previous mistakes.
And the right last name.
George W. Bush. But then we got into some foreign wars, and so we replaced this old guy
with a more eloquent guy
that could give speeches, unlike right. George W. Bush.
He just needed the right again. He needed the right strategery.
Exactly. And then, in reaction to this younger African American man, we go back to a old white guy with a personality that I guess some people liked on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a reaction back and forth. We're kind of swaying back and forth. And so, in my prediction mode of the McLaughlin Group, what we are going to react to as a society in the next election...
Prediction! Josh Logan!
...is going to be someone who is going to be young, who is going to be a person that enjoys technology, uses technology, mm-hmm. is a leader in the newer sense,
mm-hmm.
A transparent, more humble type of leader. And it can be from either party. But I think we're going to snap right back to somebody else with a different personality because we're going to get so tired of the personality that we have in the office.
Okay, so you're predicting Mark Zuckerberg is going to be the next president of the United States.
He has no personality.
No, but we're talking about the exact opposite of the current president. Younger... Hooked into technology.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe Mark Zuckerberg.
Could be Mark, but yeah.
He's already got all our information. He could blackmail all of us into voting for him.
So. Right. Just imagine all of his campaign ads that are just going to be Facebook pictures.
Yeah, and it's all going to be free. Like and it's all going to be videos that autoplay.
Like my campaign. And that's how the election's going to be. It's all going to be you're just going to click like.
Yeah.
And that's who you're going to elect as president.
Right.
Because they'll finally do a dislike button. Or, you know, that's what the polling is now. It's this big smiley face. It's the cryy face. It's the on fire face. And that's when you don't want to vote for Mark Zuckerberg.
No.
You're voting for whatever other party. That's the face that's on fire.
So in that strain of thought, I predict someone in their early 40s who...
Born in the United States.
right.
Is a citizen.
I had a good candidate in mind. Gavin Newsom would work.
Oh, yeah.
He's a younger guy with hair.
I called that back when he was the mayor of San Francisco. I said, that guy's going to be, at the very least, he's going to be governor of California.
He'll be governor, and then in a short period of time, he's going to be president.
Whether you like it or not.
Because he's pro-business, because mm-hmm. he ran a business,
mm-hmm.
and he's pro-liberal cultural values.
He's also anti-bum stumbling, because that was the one thing he was like, okay, he stumbled over one of the homeless guys around the city hall. He was like, okay, we got to clean this up. This is a problem. Now it's a problem.
Now it's a problem.
Let me tell you, Gavin, you got to get elected as governor again, because let me tell you, those guys are back. You got to clean up City Hall again.
Yeah. Yeah. But somebody like Marco Rubio.
Right.
I think next time it's going to be perfect for him. Somebody like that. It could be somebody we've never even heard of before.
Which is sometimes is the case, because you do get the repeats like a Mitt Romney. But there are the guys that come out of nowhere and totally surprise you.
Right. There's a couple of people I was thinking of earlier, but I didn't write it down, so I forgot. But it counts. It counts, people.
It all counts.
If it fits this demographic type that I'm telling you right now, it counts.
Right. If you're thinking of the same person he's thinking of right now, and you probably are.
Right. It counts.
Phil from The Amazing Race.
He's from New Zealand. He can't run.
Man.
But he'd be great. He'd be great. Anyway, that should do it for this week's, this, I'm sorry, not this week's, this, this edition.
Right.
Of the Unlikely Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you again next time.
Bye-bye.